Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Brian Beeler here. Across from me is usual Kevin.
Yeah, although I'm here too late to get free pizza Fridays, but yeah, that's things are a little bit different these days.
No pizza today for you, although I did have a nice bit of leftover La Rosa's for lunch today as I sat here by myself contemplating our life. Adam is remote from Northern Kentucky.
Waiting on my pizza as well.
Yeah, well, keep waiting, buddy. And then from all the way out west, Tommy Fenton.
Brian.
Okay. I just had a flashback to being in trouble in English after not reading the story beforehand. And then that was the teacher about to inform me that I got a 8% on the quiz.
I still have nightmares about those types of things.
Ah, Tom, you just ruined me for the next hour.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to say yes, Tom. So let's try it again. Okay, Brian.
Yes, Tommy.
I fell in love this week.
With Joel McHale watching episode 8 of Tiger King?
No, with that little Intel Nuke 9 Pro.
I know you did. You got really excited about that. We posted the review this week. You've always been a Nuke fan. What is it that got
not,
you both?
Not true. I was a Nuke denier, Nuke denier until I got one. I said, you know, what the hell's up with these little guys? And, you know, everyone was clamoring about them, all the little fanboys. Yeah, what's up with you guys? Until I started using one, and pretty damn cool. And this latest one came into my life, and not quite as petite as the first ones, but man, I think guys are attracted to thick girls now, right? Thick devices,
something like that. This is basically a workstation. So what has Intel done, for those that don't know, that makes this better, different than any other sort of micro workstation out there?
They kind of listened to the community is what they did. They took a way of a lot of things people didn't like about it. Probably the biggest thing, maybe I should say that for kind of the high. Now let's go with the biggest thing, is they threw a couple PCIe slots in it. Then they put a Xeon processor, and then they put in out of bound management with the vPro stuff, and they gave it 64 gig of RAM. But I think if we get new chips, it'll support 128. What else did they do? They gave it Optane support. They gave it spots for 3 NVMe drives, including 110 NVMe drives. Have you guys ever seen 110 NVMe?
Oh, the 22110. That's just like the full length M.2.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, you can slam this guy pretty big. And the one that Intel sent me, it had the NVIDIA Quadro P2200 card in it with 4 DP display ports on it. And, you know, the benchmarks, they came out really nice on it.
Kevin, you run a giant workstation on the floor of your office. Do you? And we've seen these little things in HP sent us one little micro, I can't remember what it was called, that little micro desktop dude.
It was like the Z2 Mini.
So the Mini.
Z3 or Z2?
I think it's the Z2. Okay. But so my workstation is gigantic, but it's less powerful than that thing, that little HP. I think it's might be a 4-core system.
Well, the nice thing about the one Tom looked at, this new Nuke 9 Pro, is that it has PCIe slots in it. So most of the mini PCs, I don't think any of the mini PCs have PCIe slots, do they?
Well, they would have the mini PCIe slot that kind of looks like an M.2, but usually that's for like WAN cards. Or early on, it was like little GPU decoder cards and stuff, but they're not really for anything else beyond that.
So this is interesting. And Tom, I know you've spent more time with Intel and the Nuke team on these types of things. Is it your feeling that they fancy doing more in the systems business? Because early on, it was more of like validation or showing what could be done. It was a little bit more of an engineering project. I mean, this feels a little bit more like something that skews up at Best Buy or something.
Yeah, definitely. I, like Kevin was saying, he has this big system sitting next to his desk, noisy, loud, heat spewing out of it. It's
Are
like
we
I
talking about Kevin or the system?
Both.
It's not noisy or anything. You're
Match the
noisy.
User to the system. But this guy's just little. I mean, you can mount it under a desk if you want. It's a little bit heavy, but getting into it's a little bit tricky. And it supports Windows Server 2019 and Drumbeat officially supports ESX.
Yeah,
So
you've been messing around with SLAM and ESXi on this thing.
yeah, right. Yeah. In fact, the first article I didn't even go there because I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a headache, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, just right off the bat, it installed. I didn't have to do nothing. It just worked.
So I think I'm probably thinking about this wrong then. This should probably be thought of more in the micro server category than the micro PC category.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. I don't think it could still work in that area. I mean, when you're looking at a server, you're looking at something that can at least support a couple of drives, if not hard drives, and at like a little bit more add-on support. It has vPro, but it doesn't have full Autobot management. I mean, it's not in that same category. It's
But
close.
if you put it up against that HPE microserver, the Gen 10 Plus, this has got, in some ways, is a lot nicer, and in some ways is a little short, right? Because ILO is more mature and probably more full-featured.
Does
But
it support ECC memory?
yes, absolutely. They have the Pro comes with the Xeon and with the i7 Core i7, and the Xeon definitely supports ECC. Because
How
that's what
much?
we were giving some other guys a hard time about, right?
What was the cost of this?
I think it lists for kind of 13, and then you can get the kit. I think I saw them on the street for about 2 grand.
Man, I don't know. In that price range, you're looking at against the that Lenovo SE350,
That's true.
and I mean, you're looking at something where, yeah, you could use as a server, but it's more of like a kind of like you could haul like sailboats with a Porsche, but you might want to maybe just use the F-150 or something.
Which Porsche?
Well, any of them. I mean,
911.
Cayenne is perfectly capable of such
the
things.
cost per mile though on that Porsche versus like a rust. No, I don't want to say like Lenovo's a rusty beater, but like a workhorse is going to be
Not sponsored
different than
by
something
Lenovo.
that's like glossy and shiny. You're gonna have it's gonna be a little more rugged. It's gonna be a bit more customizable. Yeah, the other thing can probably do it, but can they both do it for the same duration?
It's how big is that one you're talking about?
The F-150, it's a very large pickup truck.
You said there was an HP that you're.
Well, the Lenovo, that we're all actually pretty enamored with. The SE350 is half width, 1U, half depth kind of size, right?
Yeah, it's almost the size range of those little Mellanox half onesie switches.
Switches, yeah. You
It's
could
kind
fit
of
it in
around
a
that size.
backpack. It's pretty small, and the power supply is separate, which is part of the reason why it can get there. But yeah,
Yeah, and this guy has the built-in power supply, which is a little bit different than the other NICs. I think the Hayes Creek has the built-in power supply, so it's just a little unit. So think about edge. I mean, edge uses sitting in a retail store somewhere. Kevin, I disagree with you.
But you can disagree all you want, but you still have a platform that is not going to be as rugged as a traditional server. And you're not going to fit as much storage capacity in that server. You look at that versus Lenovo, and
The Lenovo can fit 10 drives.
yeah, and it has onboard Wi-Fi for the
Does it
WAN card, and I
does
mean.
does wait wait does it have 2.4 gigabit WAN?
That Lenovo has four 10 gig ports out of it onboard.
Onboard with T4 support. So, all right, we must end this heated debate and carry on.
It's a fun platform, but I wouldn't say it's a server competition device.
Nah,
And
mini server.
yeah, it's a little expensive, but it's brand new. They'll come down. The other thing that's exciting this week, and I got tweeted about it today. Of course, we've been following it, but haven't been terribly involved. Kevin, lay down this SMR scandal that WD, Toshiba, and Seagate apparently are all culpable in.
Yeah, so so SMR drives, they're different than PMR. It has those overlapping sectors, and they have roughly the same read speeds as traditional hard drives. But for write activity, for any sustained writes, you start getting this modified rewrite activity, and write performance suffers. So we looked at this.
And they've got to trim out and do some other stuff, like an SSD from the early days.
Yeah. So you'll have, we were looking at some of the SMR drives when they first came out ages ago. And this is when Seagate called it their archive drive. We did a quick kind of sample review talking about, like, here are some of the profiles of this drive used individually, and then here's how it works in a NAS. And the problem you run into for any RAID platform is, what do you do when you have to, when a drive fails and you swap it out, you put the thing back in and it has to resilver, or it has to rebuild. The drive that you have getting put back in is going to see probably its entire capacity rewritten. And in those drives, instead of large capacity drives already have a problem where you're limited to 150 megabytes a second sequential write. And if you're doing it for a 10 or 12 or 16 terabyte drive, it takes a really long time. And that's in the best of conditions. Now, what if that 120 or 150 speed went down to 20 to 40 megabytes a second?
Well, and that's where this came up, because someone had bought some WD Red drives, the NAS drives, put them into some ZFS thing, I think it was, and then started doing a rebuild or a building of the RAID and noticed it was dog slow, ran tools on it.
Yeah, and this isn't like it takes a couple of more hours. This was when we were testing it. This was 8 terabyte drives, I believe, in one of the old Synologies. Instead of being an overnight activity, it turned into a week or 2 week activity for a rebuild. So for a RAID platform, especially when you're looking at the chances of an error popping up, things like that, it's effectively unusable for a lot of RAID situations, if not all.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though, is WD's out saying, you know, we have not found any RAID rebuild issues due to SMR technology. So I think they've gone pretty firm head into sand on this one.
Yeah, I mean, they can say that all they want, but you're still going to have a problem of, if you have sustained writes, your performance is going to be a third or a fourth or worse of what a traditional drive would be. And that's why a lot of these enterprise guys or large capacity drives so far have been avoiding SMR technology for things
But this is the weird thing, is apparently this affects the 2 to 6 terabyte drives, which seems like the most inconsequential place to do this. How much could they save by removing a platter from the drive?
It's probably less removing a platter and more the platter density got high enough where you either use a 1 or 2 platter drive, or you're selling a drive that is like short stroked, that's double or triple its capacity.
Well, right. I mean, they've done that in the past, so that's not new, but yeah, it may just be an efficiency issue of, hey, we've got these platters we're making for the 14 terabyte, 18 terabyte drives. Why don't we just use those and pull back and put them in the lower capacity bins. So yeah, I don't know. It's a bad look, and anyone that's using these drives is going to be in a potential rough go of it. So even the bigger problem is the bigger they get when you talk about RAID rebuilds. But even if you had 4 6-terabyte drives and you lose one, and now you've got a RAID rebuild issue, your failure rate, what people worry about is that second failure. So if you've got 5 drives in a RAID 5 or whatever, you lose one, you put a new one in, now you're rebuilding, now you're at significant risk.
Yeah, and I think the other part that really kind of teed off a lot of people was there was no mention that these drives were a thing. So you have if you're buying the standard issue product and you're assuming it's like any other drive, these are the type of things where certain people like to avoid SMR technology for certain use cases, and no one is given a heads up warning. mean, we ran into this, remember, in the early days of Flash, where an SSD vendor went from 3x nanometer NAND to 2x nanometer NAND on the exact same product SKU, and keeping everything equal, their write speeds were half. And this was where we bought one of the drives on Amazon, one of the drives on Newegg, and they're the exact same product, exact same UPC. Same
part number, yeah.
But one's half the performance of the other. I mean, that's a problem. You can't, I think you need to tell your customers that something's fundamentally changing the product versus a damage control.
This is not a one-for-one swap of, you know, hey, we used a shinier screw. This is a substantial piece. And so WD is getting picked on the hardest, but
I think it was Seagate.
It looks like they've all done this.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just too bad. We talk about all the businesses that screwed up during Corona because of stupid communication. This is entirely self-inflicted of not being open in communications, and that's unfortunate. Moving on. Adam, what do we have this week? I know news was maybe a little bit slower. What was the what did you find for the big news this week outside of the nuck from Tom?
The news actually was pretty good. It would be about an average news week outside of shows, although all the shows would be happening right now if they were happening. But the big news, Scality released a NAS archiver, which, just like its name suggests, it works with Ring to archive NASs. It's smart. It picks the fast data and slow data and moves it around.
Scality's been at this for a while now. They're, I remember seeing them at Open Compute Project maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, they've been cranking away at this. We're a little remiss in our depth of coverage there, just in terms of hands-on stuff. Hopefully we'll resolve that. All right, what else?
For the longest time, Scality just was all about Ring, their object storage. And just recently, they started branching out to other products.
Yeah.
VMware vRealize Operation Cloud hits general availability this week. I think we covered that in the initial release, that VMware kind of ran all their announcements together a week or so ago around Sphere 7.0 and vSAN 7.0. Marvell said they've enabled NVMe over Fabrics for VMware vSphere 7.0, but I think they already had the capabilities that 7.0 allowed VMware to use it.
Yeah, that's the big push, is now it's native support within vSphere for NVMe over Fabrics. I know we still haven't upgraded to vSphere 7 yet. You might have to put a little mini cluster to work, Kevin, just to...
I don't know. I've been burnt on jumping ahead into VMware in the past, and it's like...
Hey, wait. How could you go wrong jumping ahead on the latest build with the latest features, like NVMe over Fabrics, which we know is oh so stable everywhere?
Well, there was it was a year where I realized Update Manager worked really well. I was like, hey, I just upgraded the entire lab to ESXi 6.7, and then went back to my backups and realized that Veeam didn't have support yet.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure. Well, so with a lot of these clusters, you have to have vCenter that supports the latest builds. Before you integrate that with your cluster. Now, if vCenter is all of a sudden updated past a version that your backup software supports, you might be DOA on backups until it has some built-in support there. So I might dabble with a host or two, but I think for our lab stuff, we'll probably hold off until a major project comes up, just so I don't shoot myself in the foot like last time.
So disappointed that you learned from your mistakes.
It happens.
Not often.
On the Marvell side of this, it was their existing NICs and HBA, so they didn't actually have new products around this.
All right, what else?
AWS's snowball snow stuff keeps getting larger and larger and faster. It used to be just like a big dumb box that you could load stuff to and ship to AWS, and they're having more and more edge devices and a GUI now. So,
yeah, I think the sneaker net is still a very popular methodology of moving big chunks of data from prem to cloud.
Yeah, there was we've seen it pop up a couple of times now on recovery platforms or offsite platforms that have the sneakernet as an option of, well, shoot your data on a hard drive out to that location and then copy it over and then build on whatever chains data exists after that.
Yeah, it's just faster if you're going to move many, many terabytes. And sometimes, you know, security is a concern too, so people feel better.
Can you eat the hard drive after you're done with using it?
Lots of buffalo wing sauce, and then you can eat a hard drive.
Oh, that's so crunchy.
No, you just swallow it whole.
You're not going to be swallowing one of these snowball suitcase things, though.
Probably not. The other news of the week is probably on your list, the AMD Epic updates. Kevin, what would we have there?
So AMD, they announced some of the new processors with higher clock speed and cache. So there are certain workloads that still benefit certain lower thread count applications. And these weren't the fastest processors ever released, but they hit certain TCO marks where maybe you don't need as many cores, maybe you prefer clock speed, or maybe you need a little higher clock speed, some more cache. These processor offerings kind of filled those particular gaps.
More cost effective too, I think.
Yeah. Well, pricing is still kind of strange. I mean, we don't have a lot of market visibility into street pricing at quantity that like we usually look at release. It's like release prices versus what you get Newegg, and everything looks skewed at that point. But it's supposed to hit certain points where they should be competitive in the lineup, especially against their the Intel counterparts, where these are designed to go head-to-head against.
Okay.
It is kind of interesting to write this as they tiptoe around the VMware core count tax, and they tiptoe around saying Intel. They say our competitors, and these are...
Yeah, AMD is trying to not bring any more heat upon themselves is the take that I get.
Maybe they're trying to compete against people running server applications on iPhones.
I don't think so. But you know, they're trying not to aggravate their partners too, and it's tough. I mean, we've had lots of conversations with the server vendors. They want to offer AMD systems, but they also have to talk to and make sure that 95% of their business is happy. So it's kind of hard for Dell and HPE and Cisco and Lenovo to go champion AMD when that's such a growing but a small percentage of their business.
Yeah, and AMD makes GPUs too, so they, you know, they still want to sell those GPUs they make.
They don't I think a lot of people still have that that notion of they're happy with a given type of product. They don't want to rock the boat too much. Although, if you can jump off that boat and go onto something that has a dramatic price differential,
right,
then it becomes worth it. But now you're having to have like licensing shakeups on the VMware side and other areas that make things it adds more questions than that that equation shift.
Well, ultimately the workloads win though, right? Because now we're seeing more variety of SKUs, more number of SKUs, and while it might be harder to find the right one for what you need, at least in the Swiss Army knife of, you know, dozen processors, dozens of processors, there's got to be one that's pretty perfect for what you want.
Well, yeah, and remember, a lot of those guys, it's not like they're making 25 hardware different processors. It's something where they make a couple of SKUs, and if something doesn't have the same batch quality, they'll disable cores, maybe lower clock speed, and it's a lot of the same product, but they'll downscale to either hit price or batch numbers.
Yeah, well, that was all interesting, and even though our receiving department was a little slower this week, we did get some other new things, and we got that data on two-node HCI, Windows HCI, Azure Stack Cluster, which is pretty cool. And still sitting in the box upstairs is a heavy one from Eaton, that rack we started to talk about last week coming in. It did come in, that wall mount rack.
Could it be a door mount? I mean, if you have hinges strong enough, put it up.
A door?
I am so sad I missed that. unloading another rack.
It's supposed to be hangable by one person. So I don't know if we'll find out about that. Are you going to actually hang this thing on the wall?
Yeah, I just need to figure out a spot where we're not going to put it into one of our metal studs. I had to figure out which walls would safely support it in something where I wouldn't mind that being in a position long term. Although
it might not be bad in the little mini lab.
Well, I don't know about the mini lab, but our utility room that has a UPS, a switch, and a firewall now. And then for all of that gear, we have a 42U rack. That room might be cleaned up pretty well with that type of thing.
Where would the rack go?
I don't know, to a Redditor or something.
Yeah, we can make that happen. Yeah, and speaking of Redditors, so this week's interview is with Jeff Kennedy of Eaton, and we got into the rack and went over all of that, and then I pinned him down during the interview to see if we could do a contest of nastiest racks from have people send them in, and he said he'd support that and send a wall mount rack to the winner. So we're gonna.
What if I take pictures of the back of our racks?
Yeah, it doesn't count. We already have one of these anyway. So we'll put up something next week about that. But we'll host a contest, see what sort of photos we can get in from home labbers or small businesses or whatever. And you could have a handy dandy new Eaton wall mount rack coming in, mini rack. So that's pretty cool. Let's go ahead and bring in Jeff now. We'll do that interview and learn a little bit more about that and some of the other things Eaton's working on. Joining us on the podcast today, we've got Jeff Kennedy from Eaton. Jeff, thanks for checking in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So what's going on down in Raleigh? You guys operating as best you can, I suppose, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's up and running for us. I actually think I'm about twice as busy as I normally am. we're riding through this and looking to come out on the other side in a good spot. I'm sure many people are.
We're all doing the same thing. So as you know, because you braved the harsh conditions to ship it to us, we got a big box. Well, not big by your standards, though. We got a heavy box in from UPS yesterday. It's the mini rack. It's the smallest rack I think you've ever sent us of the 7 or 8 that you've sent north to Cincinnati. Pretty cool little solution. How did this come to be?
Yeah, I love it. It's a personal favorite solution of mine, for sure, with the mini rack. Really, it came together via a partnership that we have in the reseller community, their sister company, Blackhawk Labs. They made the introduction. I saw the offering. We flew out to California, where they're based, and they came out here once, and we kind of married it up with the partnership standpoint. A lot of our existing kind of sales channels and manufacturers reps were already selling it, so it was kind of meant to be, and we pushed it out there, and it's a great solution for kind of remote closet type of deployment. So we've seen a lot of success so far with it.
Yeah, well, I think back to the very early days of Storage Review before we were working with you guys, actually, and like a lot of small businesses that start growing, we quite literally had servers on the wire shelving units in our closet. It's funny to think about, but that's not that outlandish. And in fact, I know in your slide deck for Mini Rack that you guys have, I think page 2 is a bunch of really disgusting edge deployments with servers and crap just piled on each other and dusty and dirty. You know, it's just funny, though, as we think about the problem that we had, and that was, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, but the problem hasn't changed. In fact, it's probably gotten worse since more tech has been pushed out to the edge. The timing on this is pretty good, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And actually, truth be told, for that slide deck I sent you, one of the pictures I actually took myself, and it was only a couple months ago when we went to an unnamed healthcare facility. So I think the 1980 subwoofer that the piece of equipment is sitting on is truly that old. So yeah, I mean, we're still seeing that. I think the biggest thing is purely around budgets, right? So, you know, a lot of edge type of environments and trying the different businesses trying to push that type of connectivity out to their customers and their local branch businesses is great, but it doesn't necessarily jive well with the funding, right? So you might be able to get your switch and your or your server or your UPS, but and then you got to have a good safe place to put it. Sometimes your budget falls a little bit short there, and we've kind of seen that. But I think we're trying to focus, or I think as the focus changes a little bit in these environments, and the businesses realize how important they are, they're also realizing how important physical security is as well. And that's why I think, you know, this is a great offering because it provides that, you know, gets it up off the floor from a dust debris, someone tripping onto it standpoint. But then you also have the locking option to keep, you know, unwanted individuals out of your IT offering.
Right. So this thing mounts to a wall. So I suppose ideally you'd be drilling into studs, or you'd be setting this up, you know, in an appropriate environment. And then it has a locking cage that comes down over the top that can secure the thing. So for people that haven't seen this yet, the servers and networking equipment kind of dangles top down. So this isn't a traditional, you know, horizontal rack mount. It's a vertical mount. But like you said, you can put it up on the wall. You can put it, you know, it's got cutouts. You can have the power in there. You can have this thing really self-contained if you do it right. Now, I know, I think ours is an 8U. This comes in small to large, though. You've got 2U all the way to, what is it, 10U on the depth?
Yeah, you can go all the way up with kind of 10U standard depth. You also get patch panel mounting space so that everything is consolidated within the container, just to again add to that security. So yeah, up to 10U.
Yeah, I just think it's neat because you guys make obviously you make short racks and all sorts of other specialized or more use case targeted racks, but for this one to be able to get it off the floor to secure it, because a lot of these things, you know, like our story where servers were literally in the closet, a lot of these situations have equipment that's generally accessible by anyone that works at that company, which is probably not ideal. Just not that, you know, some people will be malicious, but not that there's malicious intent, but it's pretty easy when you're going for a thing of paper clips to, you know, step on the cord or, you know, accidentally push the power button with your, you know, your hip as you lean to try to grab some markers out of the closet or something. So just from a best practices standpoint, this is pretty cool too.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's really easy to accidentally bump into something. Also, you know, from a dust debris standpoint, it's not like most people are cleaning their closets, or the cleaning crew that comes in to, you know, to clean your building isn't exactly probably vacuuming your closet. So a fair amount of buildup can happen there as well. So I think that, you know, the filtration and some of the airflow that come with this are kind of another kind of key advantage to it is, you know, not only get it up off the ground so someone doesn't accidentally bump into it, but then actually, you know, if you're going to invest that much money into something, try to keep it clean, right? And keep it working properly.
Yeah. So you guys have a couple accessories that go with this. And one of them, you're talking about the air filtration. You've got little like magnetic screens, three of them that cover up the top section that's perforated, right?
Yeah, correct. They're for the perforation. We have synthetic screens that are magnetic, and what's nice about that is they're reusable, right? So it's not like you have to replace them every 6 months. You literally just pop the magnet off, run it underwater, let it dry, and then throw it back in there. So it's kind of a set it and forget it type mindset, and not something you always have to come back to. I'm outside just making sure, hey, are they clean? Oh, they're not. We need to wash them off, dry them, and then slap them back on the rack. So. It's pretty simple from that standpoint too.
Yeah, I was thinking too, because I haven't picked up our box yet. We're gonna do a video on this afternoon and show everybody. So everyone listening, you can check out the YouTube channel and see the video hopefully by this evening. It's pretty beefy, but you guys feel like if you had to, you can do a one-man install on this thing?
Yeah, so it is beefy. It's actually beefy for, intentionally, because we wanted to be able to hold a fair amount of weight. So the fact that it can hold up to 400 pounds gives you the option of, you know, having a switch, two switches, a switch here, a server, and then having a UPS and even adding an extended battery module, right? The weight concern is probably more on the UPS and EBM side. So we wanted to make sure that we gave you kind of the flexibility to be able to support all that equipment. But I mean, in addition to that, the modularity, right? So it all kind of locks in together to a simple install. So, you know, one person can realistically install this whole entire enclosure, including mounting it to the wall in about 15 or 20 minutes. Okay. I've done it personally, so I can give it the check mark on that.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because I think too, I know you're thinking about this more as a as an edge enclosure for businesses, but I would think a lot of the home lab guys and others, you know, that want to organize that stuff, might have some interest in it as well, even for home use. You know, I don't know, you know, what your price points are. Are you comfortable talking about that? Where does this thing start from a pricing standpoint?
Yeah. So there's kind of two versions. There's a secure version. There's also the open version. The open version starts at a few $100. I think it's like $180 is the kind of the low end. So if it's at your home, honestly, your open is probably fine, right?
Right.
So you could go with something a little bit less expensive from that standpoint. I think the largest model we have is a compact and a tall model. The tall model maxed out to 10U, I think, is around $600 or $700.
Okay.
But that's the biggest one we have. So really the whole entire portfolio ranges from, I'd say, probably about 200 to like 700, maybe 750 on the largest one that we do.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You might have to, I know it's not your traditional go-to-market strategy, but this might be a good one to get on Amazon or Best Buy or something as part of the online catalog, just to help get this out there in more hands. Because at those price points, I think about, I mean, your pictures of the messes that you took, we work with the Home Lab subreddit a lot on over on Reddit, and there's a lab gore tag for some of these guys that show specifically photographic evidence of the nastiness of their lab and lack of organization. I could see a lot of interest in putting something like this to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I do enjoy getting on Reddit and looking at that as well. I'm a frequent visitor to those type of forums.
Yeah, I think we might have to, well, I don't know if we'll give ours away. We might have to convince you. Maybe we'll do a contest of submit your nastiest 10U or less pile, and we'll see if we can't get Eaton to send you a mini rack and as a reward.
Yeah, we can probably certainly do something like that. Actually, we've already done one, so there is one lucky person out there that we had a little contest internally with existing Eaton product owners, and we sent one out. So I think that's definitely something that we could do.
All right, there's nothing I like to do more than put you on the hook on the podcast. Not yet.
No, bro. Hey, I commit. I will give away one free mini rack.
All right,
you have my word.
All right, we'll work with you on that, and we'll see if we can get some good photographic demonstrations going of that nonsense. So I know, I know you guys are excited about that, but you've got a lot of other things going on. You've got a lighthearted effort, I suppose I would call it, with this IT Galaxy solution. I went through the process, the steps yesterday, and built my infographic. I'll post the summary in the podcast notes. But that's a fun little engagement tool to give IT pros something to play around with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's one thing that we have done a great job over the last few years is, we try to always kind of come up with something new, something different for, some of these infographics. And I know we've worked a lot with kind of the IT pros. It's kind of interesting that it just happens to be my IT galaxy in the midst of what's kind of happening right now, because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I do wish I was on another planet. So
sure.
Being able to design your own planet is certainly kind of pretty funny. So I think it's a good getaway. I've actually done it a few times just to see all the different options that they kind of pop out. But it's just good to, you know, blow off steam for 10-15 minutes, do something that's fun, and get a little cool infographic that you can print out and at some point be able to potentially hang on your wall back in your workspace when we potentially return to normal here.
I think my power source is coffee and core composition is sarcasm, so you know that sounds about right for me. IPAs and bourbon were not a choice on the power source drop down.
Yes. I actually tried to talk them into that, but we got waved on that one.
Yeah, I know. You know, corporate stuff. I did that. I think that's a fun aside. We've got that link too, also in the podcast. So for people that want to check that out, it's a fun little distraction to go through your IT journey. So that's pretty cool. In addition to that, I know you guys, before I leave that, I do want to ask you, cause I know you're the multicolor guy on your PDUs. One of my favorite questions in that thing was your rack color. And I'm sure 99.9% is going to be black, but what I know you guys did a whole PDU series with custom colors, pink, blue, green, whatever. And I know you've got a lot of these painted racks that you sell as well. Are you what's the number two color after black?
So I can tell you what we sold last year. So last year, black, then red and blue are the follow that. Yellow came in fourth. And I actually sold some brown ones, which I was surprised by, that those went before the other ones. So last year we sold a total of five colors. And this year actually I've actually sold some orange ones as well. I'm actually pretty interested to see if colleges start to get involved in the mix, because I'm sure that they're going to want to do their different colors, or corporations want to do their corporate colors. We have seen that a little bit in the past in regards to requests that we've gotten. So black is by far still number one. But red and blue are right behind it. So they run a pretty close second and third.
Is that just on the PDUs or is that for the rack paint too?
Just on the PDUs for now. I mean, still with racks, you know, 99.9% of what's out there, right, I think, is either black or white. We have seen more white, I will say, being sold just because of the type of environment they're going into. But not a ton of requests for other colors. Yeah. I mean, the odd one will pop in every now and then, but it's not to the level of PDUs. So PDUs, we've actually, you know, I think we kind of hit a vein and people... also, too, for recognition between A side and B side, right? So if they're both black and, you know, you're sending someone out to the rack and they don't know, versus you saying, hey, I need you to go in, you know, rack 20 and I need you to look at the red PDU. It's, you know, they always say pictures are worth 1,000 words, right? So if colors help you identify things faster, then that's certainly a good thing. So I think that's why we have seen some traction there. And in particular for the PDUs, it's just quick identification.
Yeah, well, I'm laughing about your identifying in A side and B side. That level of formality knows no has no place in our lab. I think, you know, we've got a number of your PDUs in there, but I'm not sure Kevin follows proper policies. In fact, most of the servers we have their second power supplies ejected because he doesn't want to spend the fractional watts of them even plugged in. But you know, our environment is not typical for sure. But yeah, that is pretty neat though, just from a quick visual of color coding. You know, if you say go to rack 20, you know, red 8 or something like that, it's almost like Battleship. You can, you know, pretty quickly find that spot on the grid and do whatever you need to do.
Absolutely.
One last thing before we go. I know you guys are known for batteries, racks, things like that, but there's a lot more. I know we've been using the connected Ethernet cards with the backups and we've been using the PDUs with the connectivity and the sensors and all this other stuff. You guys have so much more there, and in fact have a ton of software too. This week you guys put out an update on Predict Pulse, as you know, that's one of your many reporting and connectivity items. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so you know, we're just continuing to add to the portfolio, evolve it, also intertwine the different offerings that we have, so it works more as an ecosystem, which I don't think anybody would find too crazy, right? Because that's what our customers are asking for. I need these things to work together and work with my equipment. Probably the latest thing that we've launched is VPM Essential, which is Visual Power Manager Essential. It's just kind of a base level version to get you started. It is self-installable, which is nice because the VPM Professional version, it's a little bit more complicated, but it's a good starting point, especially, you know, if you're in an environment where you got, I don't know, 25, 50, 100 pieces of equipment and you're not really at the level of having, you know, thousands of things that you're looking to monitor. It's vendor agnostic, right? So we love it if you're using Eaton. If you're not, we understand that. Also, we understand that you probably bought some stuff before you even ever heard of us. So that's nice. It's self-installable with an installation wizard, makes it super easy. Really, you know, go out there, check it out. Subscription. It is subscription based, but it's, you know, reasonably cheap. Also, you know, if you guys want demos, we can do that too. So that's probably been the biggest piece of pushing out an essential version, which probably is more favorable for our kind of SMB and mid-market type of customers. And, you know, we're trying to be considerate of the budget you guys have, but also give you guys something that works to monitor your power along with kind of everything else in that type of environment. So.
All right. Well, cool. Well, Jeff, thanks for jumping on with us today. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the walkthrough of the mini rack, the conversation around colored PDUs and IT Galaxy and everything else you guys have going on. Sounds like a lot of great momentum, and look forward to seeing you again soon, as soon as we're back in the air.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and stay safe to you and everyone else out there, and you guys enjoy the rest of your day. So thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. All right. I'd like to thank Jeff again. And I did my IT Galaxy. Did you? Anyone else do their IT Galaxies? Probably not. I'm the only one to do that. Mine runs on coffee and sarcasm. So
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is new to me.
Well, you guys should have been paying attention.
I like how you pinned him down and put him on the spot to give away stuff. Maybe you can get the GM from Cadillac on and kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, they've got this neat little you build your own infographic, you talk about your IT experience and your environment, and it makes you a planet, and you know, there are little creatures on it, and pick your color, your PDUs, and all sorts of things.
I probably have a picture of a galaxy with a hammer in my hand and maybe like a shattered moon.
Bunch of exploratory holes through all the planets.
Yeah, that does sound about right for your galaxy. Tom, what else are you working on out west?
You don't want to hear about it, man. I've just been involved in the little nook and the compute element in it, and seeing, so my latest thing is I got ESX installed on it. I'm going to see if I can configure it for a VM to pass through that graphics card to it, so I can get the best of both worlds, ESXi and that great graphics stuff.
Well, that's good. I know you and Kevin are doing some more work on that IX Systems and the Segra platform that you've been enjoying some.
Yeah. Yep. Backup stuff. I think we're scheduled to have another meeting with those guys, and the report's working out great. You know, the problem with reports on backup, and especially when it's full featured as the Segra is, that where'd you cut it off? I mean, this thing could be 50 pages long, so really need to define it. And see what's important.
Yeah, I think it's nice that it's so capable, and they, you know, still have that free version for people that want to check it out. So that's cool too for FreeNAS users. One of the other things that we've got going on is a number of monitor projects. We posted another review this week. We had one last week. Kevin's been sourcing piles of monitors to help people find good ones to work with as they're stuck from or working from home.
I could not have picked a better time to get, was it 10 monitors?
I think we had 4, 6, 7. I think we had 7 distinct monitors and some had duplicate pairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just posted a review. You guys did one yesterday of that one with a little remote color arm calibrator arm guy.
Yeah. It's not uncommon that computers could have a built-in, is it colorimeter or you called it something else that I don't think it was color related.
You called it colostomy meter.
No, I don't think colostomy meter. But it's not unheard of to find those built into notebooks because you can close it onto the area by the keyboard and there'd be a little sensor in there and it runs through its check. On a desktop monitor, though, usually it's like a thing you clip onto the front and have hang down in front of the screen. This guy, it poked out of the like center console area.
It went full alien.
Yeah,
out of the belly.
The first day I turned the thing on, I hear like a and like all this thing just like pops out of the front. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then it did its thing and it turned on and it was done. Although the downside was after I tried to recreate that experience, it has to warm up at a very, very long interval to get that entire thing going. So it takes a while for the thing to come out, but it's a pretty interesting feature to find in a monitor.
Which that was one of the Dell ones, right?
Yeah.
It's the one with the hood.
Yeah. Is the hood still on or did you remove the hood?
Oh, it's been on since day one. Since my work from home is in the basement right now, I have a lot of these little light bulbs chilling on the ceiling. So they provide like lots of light in the basement, but they're like glare balls. So this I'm able to kind of shield them out with the hood and it's been working out quite well.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's, it's important to have a good monitor, and I think that it's one of the most overlooked things as we think about workflow, that until you have one and then take it away or force yourself back onto the notebook after you've been used to having 2 or 3 displays, it does change the workflow.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of using a notebook, and I like a desktop, but in the last 3 weeks, I've used notebooks in the several locations in weird positions because it has to travel where I can find a place to hide sometimes.
Yeah, I've been using my notebook, but it has not been open. I've been running with, because right before these monitor reviews, we were doing a ton of the USB-C docking station reviews. So I've had my little battle station set up in the basement right now where it's been working out quite well. It's almost like the desktop experience, but smaller.
Adam, that mini rack can hold 400 pounds. We could just lock you in it.
Sweet.
And you'd be plenty secure and safe from your family.
No, they'd find a way in. They always do.
I'll give you I'll lock it and then smash the key through so only you can get out. Oh, man. So we've had, I worked on some of our entertainment tasks. It was what, Casino Royale last week was the Adams Movie Corner. Did that, and then as we're stuck with the kids, and I mean stuck in the most affectionate way, trying to find, my wife started digging through the archives of movies from the 80s and 90s that the kids would appreciate today, and so we watched What About Bob, which is that's an all-time classic.
That is a horrible movie.
What is wrong with you?
Horrible. That is just, with little goldfish in his little... No.
Oh, man. That's a great movie.
There's some weird Cincinnati trivia around that.
Do you remember? You didn't say, like, Harry and the Hendersons isn't a good movie. Oh,
that's pretty crappy. What's the trivia?
Well, remember back when we had 5, 9, 12, and 19 were the only channels you could have on a TV?
Yeah, so my childhood.
And then they added 64... which was, I think WB owns it now or something. But
out of date, right?
Yeah, but What About Bob was one of the movies that they licensed, and it would be on like every single Sunday. So Sunday at like 2, you could watch What About Bob in Cincinnati pretty much every weekend for years. It was weird.
I did not know that. And
sounds like your own special little place of hell there, man.
Get out of here. So the best part about it, though, is exposing kids to these things. Because a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies, a lot of things that had any technology in them at all from that period.
Get kids to experience Bill Murray?
No, it has nothing to do about that. When Dr. Leo Marvin goes to bed, he claps and the lights turn off.
Yours don't do that?
No, not on purpose. And so I had to explain to the now 17-year-old, as of yesterday, happy birthday, boy, about what a clapper is.
And so, to explain to him about the clapper?
Yeah, because how would he know? Kids don't know what a clapper is. And so I'm saying, yeah, it was a thing. It was like $20. You bought it. You plugged it into the wall, and then you normally plugged a lamp into it, and so you could clap when you're ready to go to bed and your light turns out. And he thought about it for a minute, and he's like, that's actually really useful. I'd like to have one of those in my room. So it's funny, like how the technology, we've got all this.
Find one for you.
We've got all these apps and we've got voice input and you can tell Alexa to turn your crap off. But the simplicity of a double clap to power on and off electrical devices is fantastic.
Then the clapper didn't spy on you like Alexa does. So that was
only $15.
They still sell it?
Yes, the clapper.
The OG clapper.
It even looks like it's tinted with tar smoke.
That looks like Kevin's showing me a picture from Amazon probably. That's that looks like old stock clap inventory. On. Oh my gosh, they haven't clap even updated. Off. Save that image. We're gonna have to put that in the podcast notes. But that's fantastic. So
I love that it has a clap detection light.
Wait, how?
What?
So you can tell if you're like clapping sufficiently.
The thing's going to be behind a dresser or something, right?
It's a little debug feature. It's like out of band management on that little server Tom has.
Oh my gosh! All right, so what do we have in?
Hey, wait.
I knew. I tried to. Yeah. Adam, I tried to go quick.
No, I need to know what kind of car Kevin got the other when he tried to bail out. You were picking up a new car, Kevin, weren't you?
I was.
No, he was signing a loan agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, yeah, he was trying to. Yes, Kevin, in his infinite wisdom, decided to refi his home in the middle of Coronageddon.
Good Lord. The mortgage rules really changed in the past like couple of months, especially as like jobs were being lost and stuff. And
Kevin almost got himself fired because of this.
Well, yeah. So they normally it's like before closing, they have to verify you're still employed like 10 days before closing. Well, they changed it to 5 days before closing. So I think they were calling Brian towards the end. I think it was 3 or 4 different times. And at a certain point,
he couldn't believe Kevin had a job.
Yeah, they were incredulous over it. And
you're in IT. You got a job in IT, really?
a job at all?
Yeah. So I refied. I did my closing with a portable notary in my garage.
And wait, it's not a portable notary. You don't carry them around in your pocket.
Just steal their stamp.
And I think it's a mobile notary, perhaps.
Yes, mobile notary.
Not a portable one.
But did the closing in my garage, which is a little bit different than before. And this will be the third or fourth loan of my current home. I had a knack for refinancing homes, which the math works. It's just really weird going through so much documentation.
Anyway, so before Tom took us off on that adventure, but Tom, I will give you one more chance at an aside. You didn't bite on it at the top, but did you go and watch Joel McHale's episode 8 now of Tiger King?
No, but I will. I'll do that tonight. Yeah.
It's not great. It's, you know, one of those at home remote specials, but he caught up with 7 or 8 of the guys from the show and
did a little meth with him.
Just sort of, no, I don't think Joel McHale's big into meth. I could see some other things, but no, he caught up with them and went through it. And it's kind of like those Bravo shows that Andy Cohen always does, the wrap-up show after the season's over. You kind of need that sense of closure with Tiger King, I think.
Oh, it's not even no, that's going to go on for years. Yeah. That's Tiger King.
Well, I know you're convinced they're going to go do the one in South Carolina, but the biker
Jeff Lowe
jacket guy was on this with Joel McHale, and apparently, you know, the zoo's still running and still kicking out there in Oklahoma. We'll have to do a field trip at some point.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you should for the Brian Fest next year have it in the Joe Exotic's Wild Kingdom, GW wow. Zoo. That'd be cool.
Tom, you're mostly full of terrible ideas, but you know that one actually sounds plausible. Maybe then we could actually do that Ventara EBC briefing they wanted to do, but then chickened out of.
We could probably. I don't know, if we rolled up, maybe picked up a couple of baby tigers and showed up at the EBC, they'd let us in, maybe.
Maybe. So the Ventara HDS EBC is in, I think it's Oklahoma City. It seems like the most Japanese thing you could possibly do. Be like, we want to open a thing in the U.S. Where should we put it?
Near a steakhouse? Or
dead center in the middle of the country, so it's inconvenient for everybody to go to.
Aren't there some other guys that are out there?
I know that Seagate, I think, had some people out there.
And some of the EBCs have been located near data centers, and you'll generally find some of the newer data centers built out in the middle of nowhere where power is cheaper, or maybe labor, just space in general. So it might not be that bad. It's a different venue.
Yeah, but considering the other ones that we've been to in Raleigh and outside Boston and Santa Clara and other places where there are masses of people.
Well, yeah, but the last time we went out to a place in Boston, didn't we get like almost killed by a snowstorm? You're not going to find that in Oklahoma.
That was 2 times ago.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't. I don't know if it snows in Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma gets some. Oh, yeah, it's just the tornadoes. Yeah, a little snow.
Yeah.
And Timothy McVeigh, wasn't he the one that
yeah.
blew up that building? Man. Speaking of, I know we deferred. Of events, though, before we go back to AMC, VMworld punted this week and went all virtual. Virtual events are just tough.
On a side note of that, there's some V-mugs that are going virtual as well.
I actually did a V-mug yesterday for Minnesota, virtual V-mug.
Oh.
Yeah, you're excited about that, I can tell.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Yeah, it went fantastic. It was really good. I was really excited. And they are what they are, right? About 40 people show up for my session, got half a dozen questions. So, yeah, it was good.
It's better than nothing, I guess. But the expense to put on a virtual VMworld, I just don't know. I don't know if the return on investment's there, rather than just pushing back to when you can do a live event or do a series of smaller events when it's safe to do so. The virtual events, they just lack so much engagement.
So you think that VMware has to be at the Marconi Center another year after this? Think they just pushed it back, or...
I think they're going to be there for 5 or 7 years. I mean, I think
it's going to be a while.
Yeah. I thought it was a 5 year. So you think they just extended the lease and they couldn't get out of it?
I don't know. I'm sure there's a force majeure clause in there that probably gives some flexibility.
What's with that fancy talk? You're talking force majeure. What the hell's that?
Yeah, it's Italian.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Huh. One of the love languages.
The romantic languages.
Yes. So VMware is done. What's left? NetApp Insight? Is that?
Yeah, they're usually one of the last ones.
In October. Let's see. So that would mean Cisco's gone, Lenovo.
Citrix stayed. They just switched a bit virtual after saying they weren't going to. Like the next day, they're like, we did.
Man, I got, I think it was Veeam where I got one of the emails saying, like, prepare for the show. And then, like, they did a rapid PR follow-up of that. Like, make sure it's a virtual thing, like we're not actually meeting.
Yeah. Well, in Citrix defense, they were having it in Florida, and the day they said no, we'll still do it physical, then Florida had the huge explosion in cases, and they're like, you know what? Never mind. So
yeah, so NetApp might be the last chance to get on the airplane for a trade show this year, which will be interesting to see if they go through
with that. I thought someone pushed theirs back till October and to Vegas.
Yeah, Lenovo pushed back. Okay. And so you're right, that would be the other possibility.
KubeCon Europe still says they're going to do an in person. I don't know how. Europe doesn't seem to be handling this too well. So.
Well, they're all on the decline. So I guess it just is going to be an issue. I mean, Ohio is set to reopen May 1st in a staggered way. So
didn't DeWine say no large gatherings throughout the rest of 2020, though? Yesterday?
No, yeah. He did not.
I thought they said that.
I don't think so. The question was more around sporting events. And, you know, I think there's just a question about how do you do that? How much do you lock it down? How much do you care? I mean, everyone's got their opinions. You know, I've certainly been vocal about saying that I think we need a little more trust in the system to let people do things and get back to work. But, you know, that's just my opinion. So we'll see. So Tom, you're going to catch up on Joel McHale. Adam, what do you have for us? You gave us Casino Royale last time.
Yeah, that was like the best James Bond movie I think I've seen.
I had forgotten that was the first in the new series with Daniel Craig.
They kind of dropped a lot of the silliness and made it a little more realistic, I guess. Still not realistic, but realistic.
Well, the last couple of Pierce Brosnan ones were pretty bad.
What was it? The parasailing down the waterfall or whatever it was.
Yeah, the ice thing, and then the solar thing from space and the North Koreans.
I like Goldeneye, and then it got pretty bad after that.
Yeah, they made some bad ones. So this week, I was thinking something a little more fun. You can watch this on Hulu or Prime. Cabin in the Woods, have you seen that?
Wait, you just had us watch someone about being in the woods.
Nah, this is a funny movie.
Just Josh Wheaton's movie?
It was the movie.
You have redeemed yourself in my eyes. This is a great movie, guys.
This movie is a lot of fun. The weird thing about this movie, it's got Baby Thor in it because they actually made it, I think, in the mid-2000s, and the studio went bankrupt, and it just kind of floated around for a few years, and they released it like 2010 or so. So it's like, well, the Hemsworth brother, the Thor, he's in it, but he's real small, and they don't really market him because he wasn't famous at the time they made the movie. It's kind of interesting.
So I vaguely remember this, and I'm looking at the poster now, and it's like a three-level cabin that's being twisted like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
What's the premise?
Basically, it's like a normal horror movie where teenagers go in the woods to get murdered, but it's actually ran by this cabal that controls the world. So they are causing these things to happen.
Wait, in this one cabin?
Yep.
Why would the cabal focus in on one cabin?
Because they need to do it to satisfy the whatever the big bad is. So it's kind of like a subversion of the normal horror tropes.
On the idea of this movie, have you guys ever seen Stay Tuned?
What the crap is that? Is that that sounds like some awful riff on Poltergeist where she's watching the
kind static. Of. You'll have to look it up.
It's not John Ritter, is it? I remember he made a terrible movie that sounded something like that.
Maybe, but yeah, John Ritter. Yeah. This is a similar type of thing where all of a sudden like they get sucked into the TV or I think it was like the dish or something. And they're like going around to these other like these little like evil TV show type things.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about it other than it was John Ritter, and I don't know why I know
it
that.
It was hilarious and awful, but I think it would fit in well with Adam's Movie Corner.
Yeah, but I don't think you have much credibility in recommending.
This has a 6.2 IMDb rating. It's better than some other movies we've been recommended.
Nah.
That one where they jump around in the grass was pretty crappy.
Yeah, that was bad. But the book was much better.
All right. The Cabin in the Woods. What is it on? You said Hulu?
Hulu or Prime, either.
This okay. That's a good revisit. That's a good pull, man. I think that's one of my favorite. You know, I like Josh Wheaton. I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He did really knocks it out of the park with this one. I like the early Josh Whedon. Lately, he's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I liked a lot of stuff he's done, but sometimes you have to struggle through, like Dollhouse.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode, and I'm like, this is awful. And people are like, oh, you got to get through like six episodes for it to get good. And I did it, but it did get good at the end. But man, it wasn't really worth it to suffer through the first few episodes.
Yeah, I got through a couple, and I said, this just ain't going. And I really like Alicia, whatever her name is, Dukalia.
Elijah Dooku.
Yeah, that's it.
Tom, you've got a way with the language.
Yeah. Speaking of romance language.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever that was. Tom gargled a little bit there.
I also like Chris. Do we any Buffy the Vampire Slayers here? Christine Carpenter.
I never saw an episode.
Oh, man. That is one of the best series on TV.
And it gave us some words, like Googling things. That was first said on that show.
Was it really?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, someone else would have come up with it.
Probably, but Joss Whedon's pretty good with the dialogue.
Yeah.
The first season of Buffy is not good, though. It's pretty bad.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, the first season, because I was like, I remember that show being good, and I started rewatching it, and I was like,
If someone starts recommending Charmed, I'm just going to just walk out of the room. Yeah,
Charmed's pretty bad.
Tom does like his 90210, though. Wasn't one of those chicks Daugherty from 90210 fame?
Who?
Yeah. Damn,
Shannon Daugherty. That remake sucked, apparently. 90210.
Yeah, never watched that. That was past my prime, man.
They're all dying, and it makes me feel sick.
Anything in color is past your prime, isn't it,
Tom? What is?
Anything in color is
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz and colorized it. Yep. You know, give me a good old Western. I'm happy. Happy guy.
Simpler days.
Simpler days.
Speaking of simple days, what's going on in the lab?
What'd you think of the blues?
I liked it. I said on Reddit, I said it as storage review for me, but that was good. That was a good one. I can't remember the guy's name, but I've got it saved now in my playlist.
And I can't pronounce guy names. Okay, so my pick this week is Mike Zito. Z-I-T-O.
Is this another blues thing?
Yeah, kind of bluesy. I like that bluesy electric blues, I guess is what you call it. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy, Ben Levin, who's playing at a local place this weekend. They're streaming it now, but he was nominated for 2020 Blues Music Awards Best Emerging Artist Album of the Year. So
Ben Levin. I'll give that a listen.
Yeah, see what you think about that. All right, now, Kevin, what do you got going on in the lab?
We have some kind of low-power, cost-effective HP platforms that I'm wrapping up the DL160 and the DL180.
Yeah, we did videos for those that did really well. There's an appetite for, I don't know how to say it, cost-effective but still good platforms.
Yeah.
Where they don't trim away too much fat, but get rid of, you know, some of the cost components, but you still get it. It's still an HPE. It's still a nice server.
Yeah. And we're rolling out, some new, compute centric tests. There's a good amount of stuff. I'm not sure I've been able to quantify it with output of reviews yet, but, it seems like I've been busy this week or just losing my sanity.
Probably the second part. One of the things you're working on is an AI test, and I don't want to give too much away yet, but that's pretty slick.
Yeah. I think the first round of, its rollout was it 80 or 90 hours for the duration of the test?
It was 90 something hours. And it's really, I think this is an important one because so many IT vendors will go out and say, well, our thing is great for AI ML. And we'll say, well, what does that mean? Like, well, it's really good for AI and ML. That's like the depth of the research that they've done, or they've got a customer that used it once for something. And there's not a lot of industry accepted benchmarks, and not that this will be industry accepted, but it is a real application doing its real work and will stress apparently the crap out of everything, including storage, compute, and eventually even GPUs or FPGAs. So we've got a pretty good opportunity on our hands. So few application vendors or application owners want to expose their performance profile in that way. And so, you know, this is a pretty neat step forward.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, before you interrupt me as I try to sign us off, any parting thoughts?
Just be safe in there, guys. Oh, wait, so you got to...
Tom with a rare self-interruption.
Interrupt myself. So do you guys feel like you're working from home or just never leaving work? Which one is it?
I'm in the office all week on a regular schedule. So for me, nothing changed.
Yeah, when we went. I pull in... The strange thing is, I don't think I'm really working less. Like, I'm just at a different screen watching Netflix somewhere else. But, half of my day is running tests, making sure the tests are running, and then, like, watching YouTube videos on tool restoration. I can do that anywhere. But I do come in for about half a day, and that's where, like, systems still have to be plugged in, gear has to be switched around. So it's like we're still doing a lot of the same amount of work. It's just... the first half of my day is feeding kids breakfast and lunch, making sure they're not going insane. And it's just a little bit different.
All right. So on that note, we'll wrap this up. And thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. Make sure to reach out to us. Hit our subreddit. We're doing a lot of sharing there and conversation. We will get a contest up next week about ugly home labs for that Eaton rack. So if you've got an ugly home lab or an ugly restaurant or small office or something, now's a great time to take a little of this extra time and reorganize your enterprise IT so we can get that going for you, spread a little more joy. Thanks to Eaton for being on the podcast and supporting that effort. And otherwise, stay safe out there. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.